Saga Egmont presents A Cornish Christmas by Lily Graham. Read by Victoria Fox. Chapter 1. The Writing Desk. Even now, it seemed to wait. Part of me, a small irrational part, needed it to stay exactly where it was, atop the faded Persian rug, bowing beneath the visceral pulse of her letters and the remembered whisper from the scratch of her pen. The rosewood chair, with its slim turned-out legs, suspended forevermore in hopeful expectation of her return. Like me, I wondered if it couldn't help but wish that somehow she still could. I hadn't had the strength to clear it, nor the will, neither had Dad, and so it remained standing sentry, as it had throughout the years with Mum at the wheel, the heart, the hub of the living room. If I closed my eyes, I could still hear her hum along to Tchaikovsky, her pre-Christmas music, as she wrapped up presents with strings, ribbons and clear cellophane, into which she'd scatter stardust and moonbeams, or at least so it seemed to my young eyes. Each gift, a gift within a gift. One of my earliest memories is of me sitting before the fire, rolling a length of thick red yarn for Fat Arnold, our squashed-faced Persian, who languished by the warmth, his fur pearly white in the glow. His one eye open, while his paw twitched, as if to say he'd play, if only he could find the will. In the soft light, Mum sat and laughed, the firelight casting low lights in her long blonde hair. I shut my eyes and took a deep breath, away from the memory of her smile. Dad wanted me to have it, her old writing desk. I couldn't bear to think of the living room without it, but he insisted. He looked at me, above his round, horn-rimmed glasses, perpetual tufts of coarse grey hair poking out Mad Hatter style on either side of his head, and said with his faraway philosopher smile,
"Ivy, it would have made her happy, knowing that you had it."
And I knew I'd lost. Still, it had taken me 2 weeks to get up the nerve. 2 weeks and Stuart's gentle yet insistent prodding. He'd offered to help, to at least clear it for me, and bring it through to our new home so that I wouldn't have to face it. Wouldn't have to reopen a scar that was trying its best to heal. He'd meant well. I knew that he would have treated her things reverently. He would have stacked all her letters, tied them up with string, his long fingers slowly rolling up the lengths of old ribbon and carefully putting them away into a someday box that I could open when I was ready. It was his way, his sweet, considerate Stuart way. But I knew I had to be the one who did it, like a bittersweet rite of passage. Some sad things only you can do yourself. So I gathered up my will, along with the box at my feet, and began. It was both harder and easier than I expected. Seeing her things as she left them should have made the lump in my throat unbearable. It should have been intolerable. But it wasn't somehow. I began with the drawer, emptying it of its collection of creamy, loose-leafed paper, fine ribbons, and assorted string, working my way to the heart of the Victorian desk, with its warren of pigeonholes, packed with old letters, patterned envelopes, stamps, watercolour brushes, and tubes of half-finished paint. But it was the half-finished tasks that made the breath catch in my throat. A hand-painted Christmas card with Santa's sleigh and reindeer flying over the chimney tops. Poor Rudolph eternally in wait for his little watercolour nose. Mum had always made her own more magical and whimsical than any you could buy. My fingers shook as I held the card in my hand, my throat tight. Seeing this, it's little wonder I became a children's book illustrator. I put it on top of the pile so that later I could paint in Santa's missing guiding light. It was only when I made to close the desk that I saw it. A paper triangle peeking out from the metal hinge. It was tightly wedged, but after some wiggling, I pried it loose, only, in a way, to wish I hadn't. It was a beautiful vintage French postcard, like the ones we'd bought when we holidayed there.